always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
The Sergeant at Arms of the Missouri Senate is advised to keep an eye out for the return of the stampeding herd of rhinoceroses should it return to the chamber at any point during the final vote, the final 2 days of the legislative session.
Senator from the 23rd, I believe you'd explain your amendment.
Mr. President, I will defer to the Senator from Shelby.
Mr. President, I move the Senate stand in recess until 1 p.m. today.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will stand in recess until 1 p.m. this day.
And welcome to this gloomy Thursday edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Arps Show. It is 4:06. My name is Chris Arps. Joey V there is on the wheels of steel. He gives the thumbs up. And in Jefferson City, there at the swamp, there at the scene of the crime, is my good friend and co-host Tim Jones, Speaker Tim Jones. Mr. Speaker, how are you, sir?
Good afternoon, Chris and Joey, and to everyone at News Talk STL Nation. I am neck deep in the swampiest that the swamp can get.
All right. Those that are making a living and can't listen to the House debate or the Senate debate, can't follow politics all day like we can because this is what we do for a living. Give the folks the overview of what we just heard there, Mr. Speaker.
So yesterday afternoon, as we were on air, maybe right after we went off, Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman, the Senate handler of the biggest, most important bill that we've seen in a generation in the state of Missouri, initiative petition reform, a bill designed to protect Missouri's Constitution from the ongoing attacks it has experienced over the last many years by the abortionists, the gun grabbers, the out-of-state leftist billionaires. She went to the floor and decided to suddenly change course. This was in the middle of the Democrats' 50-plus hour filibuster, and she gave the Democrats everything that they originally wanted. She, instead of pushing forward on the bill and asking for a vote, she sent the bill to a conference committee. For those that don't understand the legislative procedure, that's essentially killing the bill. Because basically she's saying, I'm sending the bill back to the House to make changes such that the Democrats in the Senate will sit down. The House, I predicted, was going to say, heck no, we won't go. And they would send the bill right back. Guess what? That just happened 5 minutes ago. The House passed a motion 104-45 telling Mary Elizabeth Coleman very politely, stop screwing around and pass SJR 74. They refused the conference. They said, we're not conferencing. This is the final deal. You guys should have passed this weeks, if not months ago. It has to be passed the way it is. Move forward in the end debate. This is the last day of session tomorrow. No time like the present. You're telling me that out of 24 Republicans in the U.S. Senate, I'm sorry, in the Missouri Senate, we don't have a minimum of 18 that would vote for initiative petition reform. I thought this was the number one priority of the Missouri GOP. So when the Senate went into session today, Bill Igel, tongue in cheek, issued that little amendment to the journal, trying to have a little fun and levity. Well, the angry caucus, as the Missouri Freedom Caucus is calling the Republican moderates, they didn't think it was funny. They took great umbrage at it. The Senate recessed until 1 p.m. Then they went back in when Senator Mike Searpoy attacked some members of the Freedom Caucus, including Nick Schroer, Denny Hoskins, and Rick Bratton regarding a totally separate matter. The attorney general defending them on the whole tweet storm, tweet gate from the Kansas City Chiefs parade thing. That caused the Senate to completely devolve, and the majority leader gave up and adjourned for the day. So, Chris, here we are. 1 day left in the Missouri General Assembly's regular session tomorrow. And it's just like a blockbuster movie cliffhanger. Will initiative petition reform get across the finish line or not?
All right, I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
Sure.
Those that would be on Mary Elizabeth Coleman's side would say, hey, the ultimate aim here is what we want is this IP reform. We want that on the ballot. Isn't that the better thing to do, the bigger picture, to get that on the ballot and get that passed and take the ballot candy out?
So I take great offense at calling it ballot candy. Unless the Democrats are going to agree that all the stuff they did over the last few years was ballot candy, Medicaid expansion, minimum wage increases, clean Missouri was the ultimate ballot candy. Look, the way you get things passed at the polls is to basically make sure the voters can get really excited about it. And so the voter incentive provisions, they're not ballot candy in my mind. They're important. They include non-citizen voting, prohibition on non-citizen voting for constitutional amendments. Shouldn't we want to prohibit that in addition to foreign interference? If you don't have those two provisions in it, the bill fails at the polls. That is definitely true. So by Mary Elizabeth wanting to strip that stuff out, she's basically saying she wants it to fail. Mary Elizabeth Coleman either wants to protect life in this state and all the hard work that Democrats, when they were pro-life, and Republicans have done over the last 50 years, she either wants to protect that or she wants Missouri to be an abortion state. I'm sorry to be so frank, but that's the choice. We either want Missouri to be an abortion state or we don't want it to be an abortion state. Mm. And in order for the ballot proposition to pass this fall, it has to have those provisions in it, because those provisions are very important to the passage of the bill. All right, take those out, it's guaranteed failure.
All right, another devil's advocate point of view. I've just lost my train of thought on it. But anyway, what's next with this, Tim? Is it dead? Is there any way to bring this back at all? Oh, okay. I remember my thought. Democrats were on a historic filibuster, 51 yes. Hours or whatever it was. It doesn't look like they were going to break. Devil's advocate point of view, wouldn't it be better to try to do what Mary Elizabeth Coleman did, because the filibuster was not going to be broken, and maybe come to some type of different agreement?
Only if you, again, same answer, only if you want the bill to fail. The only way the bill passes for sure at the ballot box is to have the prohibitions on non-citizen voting and foreign interference in elections. Otherwise, I don't know that voters are going to much care. It's a wonky proposal. It's an important one, but I think that's the only way it passes. So, Democrats have also improperly cast this. They've said you're taking away the position of one person, one vote. That's not true. The ability to amend statutes in this state is not being touched at all. Democrats, the left, the special interests, the abortionists, the gun grabbers, they want to protect their ability to circumvent the legislature and go to the Constitution. Our Constitution, I believe, and many Missouri Republicans believe, apparently enough so that it's been the number one priority of the party itself for the last many years, believe that our Constitution should not be willy-nilly amended and become the personal playground of all these leftist billionaire progressive interests. And so the statute books remain easily amendable by initiative petition, 50% plus one, not touched. The Constitution, a higher bar. But you have to have these provisions in it. And you know why you have to have these provisions in it? Flip this around. That's why the Democrats are trying to take them out, right? The Democrats know if they take them out, they can defeat this. The Republicans know if they keep those two provisions in, it can pass. So that is the crux of the matter. And that's what the Democrats wanted. At the very beginning of their filibuster, they said, just send this bill to conference and we won't filibuster it. So by Mary Elizabeth Coleman doing that, she took the Democratic position. Just believe the Democrats when they tell you what they want and why they're doing it.
Hmm. Last question there. Isn't yes. More of the blame should be placed on the fact that there couldn't be 18 senators to come together to do the previous question, and that in her opinion or estimation, she was forced to take this action?
Well, number one, we don't know that until we have a vote. There's plenty of times, there's plenty of senators that have told me over the years, I won't sign a PQ motion, but when it comes to the vote, I will actually vote for the bill. I will actually vote for the PQ. So you never know until you know. You never know until you have the vote. Mm-hmm. Secondly, that needs to be placed on the record then. If the bill is going to fail, then let's know why, right? Out of the 24 Republicans, let's find out once and for all, which of the 24 Republicans in the state Senate actually support initiative petition reform, and which ones have just been campaigning on that and never really meant it in the first place. Does the Senate president, Caleb Rowden, support this? Yes, he's termed out, but has he ever supported this? So let's put them on the record. I believe they do have 18, and many of the people counting the votes in this building believe they have 18 as well. They had 16 for sure, with four maybes. So you have the vote. You at some point, it's proper to call the question and find out where people stand and make people make a stand. That's what these people are up here doing as they're supposed to be serving the public. And so tomorrow is the last opportunity for initiative petition reform to get across the finish line this session. And as I just said, I want to give huge kudos and congrats to the Missouri House, led by Speaker Dean Plocker, Majority Leader John Patterson, and others. Chief of Staff, former Speaker Rod Jetton, has been a huge part of what I believe has been a successful year for them. They got the motion. Mary Elizabeth Coleman tried to send this bill to conference, which is what the Democrats in the Senate wanted. The House picked up that motion today, and they flat out rejected it. 104 Republicans said, no way, Jose, and they sent it right back to the Senate. Cindy O'Loughlin and Mary Elizabeth Coleman have a choice tomorrow. They can try as leaders to get SJR 74 done, or they can give up, they can adjourn, and they can all go home.
Okay, there you have it. Former Speaker Tim Jones there in the swamp giving us all the shenanigans happening at the state capitol today. One more day left, as you alluded to in your remarks earlier. We've got a big show for you today coming up. Steve Bucci, visiting fellow of the Heritage Foundation. We'll ask him about, of course, what's going on in the Middle East with Hamas and Israel. We'll also ask him about this assassination attempt of the Slovakian prime minister. We'll ask him what that's all about. 4:45, we'll have Krista's Corner. We'll discuss Hunter Biden. He is in the news. His upcoming gun trial has come up, and big news regarding him, his personal finances. We'll talk about that on Krista's Corner at 5:07. Speaker stump speech, Mr. Speaker.
I'll give a final wrap up of the Missouri legislative session. Chris, despite all the doom and gloom that I just reported on today, ultimately, this was one of the more successful sessions we've had in a few years. And I'll give a slight recap as we head into the last day.
And at 5:24, Chris DeGaulle joins us once again. He's a member of the Herzog Foundation and host of the podcast Making the Leap. We'll discuss America's annual K-12 spending, which is nearing $1 trillion. And Abbott pushes back on a claim that public schools aren't fully funded. That is the governor of Texas. Tim, we've got more debate news on the presidential level coming up. But first, I want to play you cut 7.
Joe Biden said he will debate Donald Trump twice, and he promises to be alive for at least one of them.
Donald Trump lost two debates to me in 2020. Since then, he hadn't shown up for debate. Now he's acting like he wants to debate me again.
Well, make my day, pal. I'll even do it twice. So let's pick the dates, Donald. I hear you're free on Wednesdays.
Move over, Dirty Harry, and meet Dirty Diaper. That was Biden throwing down the gauntlet. But the real story here, the many times they had to splice Joe's video together in order to get a single thought. Rachel Levine makes less cuts while shaving her beard.
Wow. And double wow. Yeah, I have not seen the video, but I've heard the criticism, Tim, that it took at least 5 takes, because there's 5 cuts in to make that 30-second video. I want to get your thoughts on that. And speaking of debates, Vice President Kamala Harris has accepted a CBS News offer to debate Trump's running mate. That is going to be either July 23rd and between August or July 23rd and August 13th. So debates are coming fast and furious. And what I find very curious about all of this, as a person who has watched debates since 1976, has really followed politics a little longer than that, is that the Presidential Debate Commission, which usually puts these debates together, is being completely shut out of this, and the campaigns are the ones that are determining the debates. This is the first time that has ever happened. You know, there has been a lot of talk. Trump earlier was talking about how unfair the debates were in 2016 and 2020 because of the Presidential Debate Commission picking the moderators. And so both camps are avoiding the Presidential Debate Commission. And this one last nugget, NBC is basically been shut out of hosting any of the debates. It seems that the Biden administration and both President Trump are angry at NBC. So I find that very curious.
Chris, this is going to be must-see TV. I don't know if it's going to be good TV or not, but it's going to be must-see TV to watch Joe Biden go up against Donald Trump. And look, whatever conditions that the Biden campaign is placing on the debate just shows that they're worried about Joe Biden's potential performance. Donald Trump needs these debates because he needs to show the contrast. He needs to show the contrast between the policy positions that Joe Biden has utilized over the last 3.5 years to literally try to destroy America, and he needs to show the contrast in their ability to govern. You know, they're only like, what, 4 years apart, but it looks like it's 40 years apart. And I don't know what they're going to do to juice up Joe Biden before they put him out there on that debate stage solo by himself without a teleprompter to go against Donald Trump, who seems to have not lost hardly a step of his vim and vigor. But it's going to be exciting television, and I hope they do as many debates as possible. Chris, on the presidential the debate group, the commission. Yeah. You know, they're just proving the point that every institution always comes to a point in time where it's in need of reform. And apparently it's going to have that reform either forced upon it this year and it's going to change its ways, or it's going to become irrelevant and perhaps resign to the dustbin of time.
And later in the show, we'll discuss the debate. Biden administration is really spinning this. They got the best of Trump in the negotiations on this. We'll discuss why they believe that. But coming up, Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. We're going to go around the world with him in about 12 and 13 minutes. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
4:28, and welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. And this just in, Tim, breaking news here. Columbia faculty support a no-confidence motion against President Manoush Shafiq. Boy, that sounds like good news, doesn't it? It's like, wow, they're standing up. She's been doing the right thing, clearing out the protesters. That's a good thing, right?
You would think.
There's would a twist think. In it, though. Okay. The reason why the Columbia faculty are supporting a no-confidence motion is because the president called in the police last month to break up the encampments.
What were they supposed to do? Jump on bulldozers themselves? I mean, you know. Well, you can't win for losing, can you, Chris?
World is going absolutely bananas. You're like, I saw that and I was like, oh, okay. Maybe there's a little reason that's coming back to the Ivy League. You know, the faculty is standing up for Israel. They're standing up for the institution and saying, hey, you, president, let this go on for too long. You need to go. No, we're mad at you because you called in the police.
You support the police. Yeah,
exactly. We're having a little problem getting our guest, Steve Bucci. I think Joe has got him on the line. Okay, excellent. Our next guest is on the line. We've got a lot to talk about him, and he has a theme.
Steve Bucci, visiting fellow for special ops at the Heritage Foundation.
Oh, yes. What were you about to ask me?
Do you expect me to talk?
Steve Bucci, how are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. I want to play this clip for you, and then I want to get your thoughts on it. Clip one, Joey.
We will provide an additional $2 billion in foreign military financing for Ukraine. And we put this together in a first-of-its-kind defense enterprise fund. And it has three components. One is to provide weapons today. So this will assist Ukraine in acquiring those weapons. Two is to focus as well on something that Dimitro just talked about, investing in Ukraine's defense industrial base, helping to strengthen even more its capacity to produce what it needs for itself, but also to produce for others. And finally, using this fund to help Ukraine purchase military equipment from other countries, not just the United States.
Steve, if I understand this correctly, we are giving weapons and ammunition to Ukraine to help their fight against Putin. But we are also setting up a fund in order for them to buy weapons from other countries. Do I have that correct? And does that sound as crazy as I've just said it?
Well, because on who they buy it from, it gets crazier if they pick the wrong countries. But it's the gist of it. There's giving them things directly today. There's helping them build some of their own infrastructure so that they can actually produce some of this stuff. I'm guessing that's probably more the munitions, not necessarily the entire weapon systems. And then the last part is to sort of seed money into a fund that over time they can use to directly tap into to buy weapons either from us or from other people.
Hmm. Steve, the conflict between Israel and Hamas rages on, and this is in the backdrop of Joe Biden making all sorts of conflicting and contradictory statements, both him and his cabinet members, in regards to our support for Israel. Israel today, Steve, had an announcement of their own. They have announced additional troop deployments in Rafah amid the warning that I just mentioned that came from the Biden administration from earlier in the week. Steve, it's never a good thing for these two, you know, small L liberal democracies to be arguing in public on the world stage, is it? Especially in the midst of this conflict.
No, it's certainly not. We should be walking in lockstep agreement to have that united front to face the terrorist entities, both nation states and non-nation state, who are threatening both our countries and our interests. That's not what's happening with the Biden administration. Netanyahu leading his government, and by the way, the protests in Israel, for the most part, are not because Netanyahu is doing too much, but because they want him to do more to defeat Hamas. So some of the liberals are misreading that when they look at the protests against the government. And Netanyahu has said, look, we've got to go with our calculation of our national interests. And that means we're going into Rafah to get those last four still essentially undamaged battalions of terrorists that are part of the Hamas structure. And we'd love to have the support of the United States, but if they can't support us in doing that, well, then we'll have to do it without America's support. Biden, on one day, on the Holocaust Remembrance Day, says we've got Israel's back, we'll be with them no matter what, even if we disagree, we're not going to leave them alone. And literally the next day, he announces a suspension of munition shipments, critical precision munitions, by the way, that would lower casualties because, Jake Sullivan doesn't like the plan that they have to go into Rafah. Last time I checked, Jake Sullivan has never conducted combat on the ground in a city. So his opinion about that plan, to me, is not terribly relevant. But Biden went with it. And then, conflicting that, a day or so later, somebody else in the administration says, oh, yeah, we just shipped them $1 billion worth of stuff. Well, either the Biden administration is cripplingly incompetent and doesn't know, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing, or they're lying at some point to someone. And I'm afraid it's a combination of all of the above. And that's really not good for America or our allies.
Speaking with Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. Steve, there was a rare split in Israel yesterday. Israeli Defense Minister Gallant issued a stunning public challenge to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, demanding that they not rule Gaza after this military incursion is over, and demanding that he present a strategy for what happens after the war. Your thoughts on that?
Well, that is, you know, I'm sorry that he chose to do it that way. I would rather see go back to the unified position they had before. But his question is a completely legitimate one. Israel announced that, you know, they would be in complete support of, you know, a coalition of nations coming in to help administer Gaza, even if it's some of the nations that, you know, anybody but Iran would be fine. But, you know, none of them are stepping up. So, Mr. Golan, his question is legitimate. Like, okay, boss, if these other people who we said, hey, come in and do this, you know, because Israel does not want to occupy Gaza, does not want to be the administrator. That plays right into the hands of the propagandists who say, you know, Israel is an apartheid colonizing power, which is not true, but, you know, it gets more relevance if they go in there and occupy that area. So they want somebody else to come in, but if nobody's willing to come in, you can't just give it back to Hamas. So Netanyahu needs to come up with a plan, and the nations of the world need to try and help him so that they don't get stuck in a catch-22 where the people who don't want them, suddenly they're the only ones who are willing to take charge of it, and that's going to be a sticky wicket for them going forward.
Speaking to Steve Bucci of the Heritage Foundation. Steve, in a related story to this, but also bringing in another problem that the U.S. is having to deal with these days, China. This headline, Steve, caught my attention at Fox News today. Chinese Communist Party-linked network behind well-funded anti-Israel campus protests. Watchdog group says the report describes the umbrella organization organizing protests as anti-capitalist, anti-police, and anti-government. Steve, is the CCP, the Communist Party of China, taking advantage of what's going on between Israel, the U.S., and Hamas, and trying to continue to destabilize the United States amidst all of this controversy?
I think that's a big, emphatic yes. Anybody who thinks China does not have an interest in just causing mischief here is crazy. They want to do that. It's a very cheap investment. They, you know, a lot of this instigation is going on online, a lot of it on TikTok, and they can plant things that serve this. They can, but they also have operatives here in the United States that are, in fact, probably paying people to come and be participants in these activities, giving idealistic young people who don't really know which river and which sea they're talking about when they say from the river to the sea, but giving them motivation and support to cause these campus incidents to become more prevalent. So yeah, China has, you know, anything that makes the United States look bad in China's eyes is a net benefit to them. And so do I have personally the hard evidence that that's going on? No, but I haven't been looking for it either. I think it's kind of, if you don't think that's going on, you're really sort of delusional.
Steve, the world's attention, of course, is focused on the wars in Ukraine and in the Middle East, of course. But yesterday, there was an assassination attempt against Slovakia's prime minister. If I remember my high school history correctly, the last time there was an assassination in that part of the world, World War I started. What's going on there?
Well, it's not quite in exactly the same area. It's quite a bit north of Sarajevo, where the Archduke Ferdinand was killed, that kicked off World War One. But it is, you know, that his government, the government of the prime minister who was attacked, very conservative, very focused on their own national interests. They're not a lot of buy into the whole internationalist type paradigm. So someone going after him, it tells you they don't want to see that trend of that type of political position to continue in Europe, somebody wanted this man silenced. And, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theory guy, but, you know, this could have been an individual who said, this guy doesn't believe in the Europe vision that I believe in, so I'm going to take him out. Or it could have been a plot. I don't know. But it is concerning. Anytime a head of state is attacked, particularly one that is, you know, a particular adherent in one direction or another of a particular political view, that tells you that, you know, this is not just a lone crazy guy, that this probably has some backing and some instigation by some force somewhere. I don't know which one in this case, but we don't really want anything like that going on.
Steve, question about a very domestic matter, but I'm wondering, you know, not asking you to comment specifically, unless you want to, on all these Trump lawfare cases, but, you know, this ongoing trial with Donald Trump in New York City, which seems to be a trial in search of truth, facts, and breaking of the law. I'm wondering, Steve, does the international community look at this and go, oh, look at that. The Americans are finally getting around to going ahead and doing what a lot of third world nations doing. They're prosecuting their former political opponents. I mean, I'm just wondering is the world looking at this? Are they taking it seriously? Do they think it means anything? Or am I reading too much into that?
No. People around the world watch our political landscape probably more closely than most American citizens do. They see relevance in every political move that occurs here. They listen to our political leaders' speeches more carefully than we do, looking for signals. So they're watching this. Does this mean America is suddenly going to drop the political system that we've had since our inception? It's contentious, though it may be, but there was always limits on that and how we did it. This is a step well beyond that point and is very concerning. So I think there's a lot of people, some watching bewildered because they have aspired to be like us, and now they're going, wow, I don't know if we want to go there. Others who are our adversaries, who wish us ill, who are sitting there going, yes, they are really tearing themselves apart. This is great. And then others who are our friends, who really care about America because they know perhaps their security hinges on a stable and leader-type regime in America, not a bewildered and bumbling one. And they're very concerned the same way, you know, most sentient people in America are when they look at Washington and go, what the heck is going on? And looking at what's happening in New York, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to opine on what's right and what's wrong. But I got to tell you, in my gut, it makes me very, very nervous. Even if you don't like President Trump, if you're a political leader of any stripe, you should be concerned that this is going on. Because if it becomes the norm, that will fundamentally change the way we do domestic politics in America, and not for the good.
Steve, Hamas is gaining a lot of propaganda value over the humanitarian situation there in Gaza. I want to play you this next clip and get your thoughts on it.
Desperately needed food, medicine, and other supplies will soon be flowing into Gaza thanks to a newly completed floating pier.
Innocent civilians should never go without food, water, medicine, shelter, sanitation, or other basic necessities.
President Biden ordered the military to construct the humanitarian lifeline 2 months ago after fighting slowed down aid delivery on land. But as the fighting continues, aid agencies fear it won't be enough to prevent a humanitarian catastrophe.
And that report forgot to mention that pier is $300 million. Steve?
Yeah, I'm not sure President Biden thought this out all the way. In fact, I'm pretty sure he didn't. He tends to be kind of impulsive with this stuff. First of all, the degree of the humanitarian disaster, and I'm doing air quotes, which I know you can't see on radio, it's based on information and data provided by Hamas, the same people that gave the UN casualty figures that were just cut down by 50%. That's not a rounding error. That means they were lying, and lying very, very vociferously. And the fact that how many people are starving and the degree that this is truly a humanitarian disaster, frankly, I think is up for some degree of skepticism. So regardless, we put in this pier. Now we still have to figure out who's going to manage this new lifeline. Does the United States have to provide troops? You know, troops built it. Okay, that's fine. But are we going to then have people stationed there to offload ships, to move the aid in? Who do we give the aid to? Do we give it to Hamas operatives? Or is there some way we can get it directly to the people? It's not a good situation. It's not something we really want our personnel, military or civilian, doing, because they're going to be right on the cutting edge of the danger. It's well within rifle range of the beach that it's next to. This is not something where they're isolated out on a ship, offshore where the bad guys can't get to them. They're going to be right there in harm's way. What does that mean? How many of our people are going to be there? What are we going to do if someone attacks our people or kills them, regardless of how they do it? Are we going to, respond? Is there going to be retribution? Are we going to go, well, it's the cost of being a good guy in the Middle East? I don't think the American people want that. Money is a big deal. This is a very, very expensive piece of equipment. But the real critical part is, how do we protect the lives and the well-being of our troops that are probably going to be the ones who have to administer this aid entry point?
Good points. That is Steve Bucci, visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. You can reach him at heritage.org and on X, Bucci, B-U-C-C-I-S, Bucci. Steve, thank you so much for your time, sir, and we look forward to talking with you next Thursday.
Thank you very much, and I apologize for getting on late.
Oh, that's okay. No problem.
No worries.
We look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you, sir. Chris's Corner coming up. Hunter Biden's sugar daddy has cut him off. I will give you more details about that on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com.
You need a flame, bro, for that cigar?
Lighting up before breaking out the cuffs. Tonight, we've got our hands on viral video showing an SLMPD officer firing up a cigar while straddling a suspect.
Tonight, we're alerting police. They've launched an internal investigation on this.
Smoking on duty. Smoking on duty.
This video clearly shows a St. Louis City officer lighting a cigar while making an arrest. Police say the officer was working secondary for Marquee Lounge when workers asked the officer to remove the man from the premises.
4:54 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. I have not seen the video, Tim, but I have seen the picture of the officer subduing the suspect there with a cigar hanging out of the side of his mouth. According to that report, there's an internal investigation going on now, but I asked why. He was doing his job. You know, in these politically correct times that we're engaged in now, you know, I was wondering, are they the activists mad because the officer had his knee in his back? Or are the activists mad because the officer was exposing the suspect to secondhand smoke? And maybe that's why they're so pissed off.
Well stated. I mean, are they just upset that he's got a little maybe style to him? You know, it's like, you know, I can smoke a cigar and subdue the suspect. I mean, yeah, the wrong thing for people to get their panties in a wringer and clutch their pearls about, I would think.
Yeah, and don't be surprised if in the near future, especially if that suspect had asthma or something, he can say that he had an asthma attack later, or he's still suffering the effects of that secondhand smoke while he was being arrested. You know it's coming. You know it's coming. Some lawyers listening or saw that report and has probably said, let me get you on a client and make myself famous. Tim, Chris's Corner, Hunter Biden's sugar daddy has cut him off.
Chris.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
You know, we all know that Hunter Biden would never, ever be arrested on the outside of a bar with an officer with a cigar hanging out of his mouth because he's unruly. Not. Hunter Biden has been privileged his entire life. His daddy has got him out of so many scrapes. So many people have helped him out out of his scrapes. One of them is a lawyer named Kevin Morse. Kevin Morse is a Hollywood entertainment lawyer who has long supported the president's son. But he has said, reportedly, he has run out of resources to help fund Biden's legal defense. This is quoted from one of his friends. Quote, the reason Kevin got involved financially in the first place was that he could see that no one was going to help Hunter. Now, 4.5 years later, there's still no help, and now Kevin is completely tapped out. So just when Hunter is facing two criminal trials starting in a few weeks, he has no resources. It's pretty dire. Reach for comment about this reporting. Morse confirmed the person's account, but declined to elaborate further. You maybe remember Kevin Morse's name. He is testified on Capitol Hill about Hunter Biden a couple of weeks ago. He said then, quote, my only goal was and is to help my friend and client. In this country, there's no prohibition against helping a friend in need with no ulterior motive. I did not and do not have any expectations of receiving anything from Hunter's father or the Biden administration in exchange for helping Hunter, nor have I asked for anything from President Biden or his administration. He said that in an opening statement. Morse has spent nearly $5 million on Hunter Biden to financially assist him. A lot of that financial system has gone, Tim, to the Legal Defense Fund, but a part of it was, go figure, he's also a art lover, and he has bought many of Hunter Biden's priceless art leading up to that $5 million in assistance. So Hunter Biden's gun charge trial is starting up, and his sugar daddy has dropped him, said, I can't help you anymore. Tim, why do you think, just offhand, why do you think his sugar daddy is dropping him?
I think maybe things are maybe getting a little hot around the Biden crime family.
You think that's it? Is it that simple?
I think it could be that simple. And this guy's like, I'm going to get while the getting is good.
All right. Speaker's on speech at 5:07.
Yes, sir. We're going to talk about the session that is about to be the session that was. There were some bright spots despite some of the doom and gloom here near the end.
And then Chris DeGaulle, member of the Herzog Foundation, will talk to him about America's K-12 spending nearing $1 trillion. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL, number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.